Joshua 11, verse 4. And it says, "And they went out, they and all their host with them, many people, even as the sand that is upon the seashore in multitude, with horses and chariots, very many. And when all these kings were assembled together, they came and pitched camp together at the waters of Merom to fight against Israel." So you've got this huge alliance of all the Canaanite nations in the northern section, which was the only part that was not conquered by the Israelites at this point. And a historian has written that this coalition had 300,000 infantry troops, plus others on horses and chariots. So this is no doubt the biggest force Israel has ever run up against, probably since Egypt. And I know that Joshua was a man of faith, but it's still hard not to think about an opponent that large. So we'll see. Verse 6, "And the Lord said unto Joshua, Be not afraid of them because of them, for tomorrow about this time I will deliver them up, all slain before Israel. Thou shalt hamstring their horses and burn their chariots with fire." Evidently God knew that Joshua was afraid, but instead of rebuking him for his fear, he encourages him with the promise. Now, Joshua does not have to believe God's promise if he doesn't want to. But whether he believes it or not, it will come to pass. They will defeat the enemy. God's word is true, whether we believe it or not. It's just that if we don't believe it, we worry ourselves sick for no reason at all. 7. "So Joshua came, and all the people of war with him, against them by the waters of Merom, suddenly, and they fell upon them." Suddenly. God used a quick-hitting strategy against these people. He uses it today sometimes also. Sinners go along in their evil way thinking, no problem. But then suddenly, wham, they're dead. They're in hell before they even know what hit them. God doesn't always give a two-minute warning. Verse 8. "And the Lord delivered them into the hand of Israel, who smote them and chased them unto great Sidon and unto Mizrephath Maim, or burning of waters, and unto the valley of Mizpah eastward. And they smote them until they left none remaining." And look at verse 9. "And Joshua did unto them as the Lord bade him. He hamstrung their horses and burned their chariots with fires." To hamstring the horses and to destroy the chariots is to destroy the defeated army's military equipment. It's like blowing up their tanks and all their guns. And believe me, those two things were expensive, hard to come by. Chariots and horses fit for battle, very expensive, very hard to come by, and not many countries had them. So why did God have Israel destroy all that valuable equipment? Probably because God knew Israel, and he knew that they would start trusting in their military equipment rather than in him if they had a lot of it. Sometimes Christians don't have everything they want, and sometimes it is because God knows that our focus would be on those things instead of him. And that's the worst thing in the world for us. Verse 10, "And Joshua at that time turned back and took Hazor and smote the king thereof with the sword. For Hazor formerly was the head of all those kingdoms." Remember the king of Hazor from back in verse 1? He's the one who spearheaded this ungodly alliance. And he's gone. Verse 11, "And they smote all the souls who were therein with the edge of the sword, utterly destroying them. There was not any left to breathe, and he burned Hazor with fire. And all the cities of those kings and all the kings of them did Joshua take and smote them with the edge of the sword, and he utterly destroyed them, as Moses the servant of the Lord commanded. But as for the cities that stood still in their strength, Israel burned none of them, except Hazor only. That did Joshua burn. Hazor was like the New York City of that area. So if God destroyed the biggest and the toughest city in that area, then the remaining cities did not stand a chance, and they knew it. And I believe that's why God singled out that big city for complete destruction. It was to send a message to the other cities that they were dead. Carry that over to today. When the New Testament talks about Christ sealing the devil's doom, it should send a message to all sinners that if the biggest, the strongest, the smartest, the toughest sinner, whoever was, is going to hell, then no other impenitent sinner stands a chance either. 14. And all the spoil of these cities and the cattle, the children of Israel took for booty unto themselves, but every man they smote with the edge of the sword until they had destroyed them. Neither left they any to breathe. The useful things were given to Israel. They were part of God's provision. The useless things, that is, the impenitent sinners who were determined to reject God, were destroyed. 15. As the Lord commanded Moses his servant, so did Moses command Joshua. And so did Joshua. He left nothing undone of all that the Lord commanded Moses. Now, all of the north belongs to Israel. Why? Because Joshua did all that God told him to do. Partial obedience won't get you the full blessings of God, but full obedience, like Joshua had, will. 18. Joshua made war a long time with all those kings, and didn't seem like a long time to us, actually just a few chapters, right? But it was a long fight. Sometimes God gives us quick victories, but often he allows there to be a struggle. It's not that God can't do it quickly, but the Lord knows that there's value in the process. There is value in the struggle. If nothing else, it draws us closer to him and builds our character. 19. There was not a city that made peace with the children of Israel except the Hivites, the inhabitants of Gibeon. All other they took in battle. For it was of the Lord to harden their hearts, that they should come against Israel in battle, that he might destroy them utterly, and that they might have no favor, but that he might destroy them as the Lord commanded Moses. The Canaanites sinned, and they sinned, and they sinned for centuries. They hardened their heart toward truth, and then they crossed the point of no return. And when they did that, God gave them what they wanted, life and eternity without him. So they were destroyed. Because God only puts up with people who reject him like that for so long. 21. And at that time came Joshua and cut off the Anakim from the mountains, from Hebron, from Debir, from Aneb, and from all the mountains of Judah, and from all the mountains of Israel. Joshua destroyed them utterly with their cities. And so God mentions specifically here the Anakim. Those guys were giants. I'm talking 9 and 10 feet tall. It was about 45 years earlier when Israel got to the Holy Land for the first time. The Israelite spies took one look at the Anakim, panicked, and said, "We can't beat them." Well, they beat them there, beat them right here, didn't they? They beat them here because they trusted and obeyed God. Do not be intimidated by anything or anyone who doesn't want you to do God's will. Obey God, and let him deal with the opposition. So Joshua took the whole land, according to all that the Lord said unto Moses, and Joshua gave it for an inheritance unto Israel, according to their divisions by their tribes, and the land rested from war. And there you have the summary. God took the whole land of Israel, the whole land of Canaan, and gave it to his people Israel, just as he promised. And actually, chapters 12 and 13 and 14 and 15, 16, 17, 18, and 19 all deal with the distribution of the land that God gave to his people. So we're not going to read all those lists. Rather than do that, let's just go to chapter 19, verse 49, and read, when they had made an end of dividing the land for inheritance by their borders, the children of Israel gave an inheritance to Joshua, the son of Nun, among them. So they've divided up the land among the several tribes and the families within those tribes. Everybody got a piece of property. This is the way God wanted it to be. In verse 50, according to the word of the Lord, they gave him the city which he asked, even Timnath-Serah in Mount Ephraim, and he built the city and dwelt therein. And so after everyone else received their portion of land, Joshua, the faithful leader, gets his as well. And just as God directed, Joshua was allowed to choose whatever place he wanted. And he asked for and he received Timnath. And I want you to know that Timnath was probably the absolute worst part of the promised land. Which really tells you something about Joshua and his attitude. As long as he had God, and as long as he was getting by with his needs being met because he knew God, he was satisfied. He didn't need great things. Fancy is okay. Not fancy is okay also. The important thing is being right with God. Now, chapters 20 and 21 record the distribution of the Holy Land among the tribes of Israel. So let's go to Joshua chapter 22, and we'll just get our foot in the door briefly here. Joshua chapter 22, verse 1. Then Joshua called the Reubenites and the Gadites and the half tribe of Manasseh. And remember, those two and a half tribes are the ones who received their portion of land outside the mainland, east of the Jordan River. Verse 2. And said unto them, ye have kept all that Moses, the servant of the Lord, commanded you, and have obeyed my voice in all that I commanded you. And so Joshua calls for a meeting. And in this meeting, he encourages and commends the two and a half tribes for the good that they did. They helped their brethren win their battles before they took possession of their own land east of the Jordan. Now, it is important to commend God's people when they do something right. We all need encouragement. And so we're going to see in detail what they did, beginning in verse 3.